Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. More than 43 million people in the United States owe more than $1.6 trillion in student debt. According to CNBC, U.S. student debt has increased by about 102% over the past decade due to the skyrocketing cost of tuition. Nearly 60% of undergrads take out a student loan. Well, at a CNN town hall with President Joe Biden on Tuesday night, an audience member asked about student debt, and here is that exchange.
I understand the impact of the debt, and it can be debilitating. And I think there's a whole question about what universities are doing. They don't need more skyboxes. What they need is more money invested in making. So that's why I provide, for example, $70 billion over 10 years for HBCUs, another minority-serving universities, because they don't have the laboratories to be able to bring in those government contracts that can train people in cybersecurity or other future endeavors that pay well. But I do think that in this moment of economic pain and strain, that we should be eliminating interest on the debts that are accumulated, number one. And number two, I'm prepared to write off the $10,000 debt, but not $50,000.
Mr. President, let me ask you.
Because I don't think I have the authority to do it by sign of the pen.
The beginning of that exchange, unfortunately, got cut off. What happened was a woman said, we know that your plan is $10,000. What will you do to forgive $50,000 in debt? And he quickly said he will not do that. President Biden has promised to forgive at least $10,000 in federal student loans per person. But on February 9th, Democratic politicians, including Senator Elizabeth Warren, gather to push the Biden administration to forgive $50,000 in loans. And here is that clip.
Canceling student loan debt is the single most effective executive action that President Biden can take to kickstart this economy. Canceling student loan debt is the single most effective executive action that President Biden can take to help close the racial wealth gap. Canceling student loan debt is the single most effective executive action President Biden can take to lift the economic prospects of tens of millions of young Americans. Data show that canceling the student loan debt would result in greater home ownership rates, more housing stability, improved credit scores, higher incomes, higher GDP, more small business formation, and more jobs. Canceling student loan debt is good for you, whether you have student loan debt or not, because it is good for our economy.
The plan to forgive $50,000 in loans is co-sponsored by over 50 members in the House and over 325 grassroots groups. That plan would make 36 million borrowers debt-free, and many studies show women and people of color would be among the biggest beneficiaries. Well, joining us now to talk about student debt forgiveness are two guests. Natalia Abrams is Executive Director of Student Debt Crisis, a nonprofit dedicated to reforming student debt and higher ed loan policy. Hi, Natalia. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks so much for having me.
We're also joined by Ashley Harrington, a lawyer and federal advocacy director at the Center for Responsible Lending, where she focuses on student debt. Hi, Ashley. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Well, Natalia, I want to start off with you. President Biden was very quick to respond to the call to forgive $50,000 in debt, saying he doesn't agree with the plan. What was your response when you saw that exchange?
I think like many of student loan borrowers that support us and follow us, it just the tone felt completely off. It was such a quick rush to no. That, you know, I think shocked us all, because from our research, and I know Ashley can speak to this, he does have the authority. We know it will benefit the overall economy, including helping folks that didn't even take out the debt. Also, there's this sense of pitting public and private colleges against each other that kind of seemed off pitch. But I will say, as quickly as he made that statement, no, the very next day, we heard from his press secretary that they are going to properly review it. So that, you know, just to put it into context, there was some good news that came out of it in the end as well.
And what would you add, Ashley?
I'd agree with that. I think we were a little concerned. I think at the outset, if you can cancel 10K, you can cancel 50K. And we should be in a position to grant as much relief as possible. This is an extraordinary place for a president to be in, to be able to do so much good for so many without having to go through Congress. That there are not many opportunities like that where you can help 44 million people and literally change their lives. And you are disproportionately going to help people of color as well as boost the economy at a time when people are really struggling, at a time when we are, you know, over a year into this pandemic, we don't know what's happening. Jobs and small businesses have closed that will never get back. And this is disproportionately also impacting people of color. And so when we look at the student loan crisis and we know who's impacted, cancellation in 50K is the only answer to move forward.
I want to ask you both about what power he actually has, if he has the power to cancel debt via executive action. He says 10,000 is all he can cancel. Experts say that's not true. And I'm just reading from CNN right now. Speaking to reporters at the Daily Briefing yesterday, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Biden planned to hold off on making any decisions on student loan debt executive action until his appointees at the Justice Department have a chance to review the issue. There is no immediate time frame on that legal review process, which will happen alongside a review by Biden's domestic policy advisors. Natalia, what are your comments on this, and what power does he actually have to cancel student loan debt via executive action?
So, you know, our feelings are that there should be a timeline. There's an incredible sense of urgency. You know, I think Ashley just spoke to how much borrowers are suffering and how much canceling student debt will help. Right now, most federal loans are on pause until October 1st, and we need to take care of the federal loan system before the loans come back online. This is the best time ever to be researching this and working on canceling the loans. And President Biden absolutely has the authority. It's via, you know, the Department of Education settlements and compromise clause. And we have seen previous presidents use this authority, starting with President Obama, Trump, and even Biden himself with the extension of this pause. So, you know, we know that he can, as Ashley says, if he can cancel 10,000, he can cancel 50,000. So we need to go for the most amount of relief possible to help borrowers. And right now, during a pandemic, this is the easiest form of debt for the federal government to cancel. It's debt owed to the federal government by the federal government.
And Ashley, what would you add specifically on what he can do via executive action?
Absolutely. The authority is right there in the HEA. Our friends at the Harvard Law Project on Predatory Student Lending have looked at this extensively. They've documented it and they've laid out how to do this. And I think Natalia also listed the examples of how this very same authority has already been used. So not only has it been researched, the legality of it, it's been used and nobody sued Obama. Nobody sued Trump. Nobody has sued Biden. So that has been done. So let's take it further. Let's provide actual relief. A pause in payments isn't enough. Go further than that. You know, on the campaign trail, he talked about helping student loan borrowers. He talked about advancing racial equity. He talked about boosting the economy. This is how he can do that.
And this was actually done in 2019, where Donald Trump actually granted veterans who are severely disabled automatic federal student loan forgiveness rather than requiring them to fill out paperwork for a benefit provided by law. And according to the Washington Post, the partnership between the Education Department and the VA has resulted in the federal government providing more than $650 million in student loan relief to more than 22,000 eligible veterans. That was a huge deal, Natalia. So it seems like Biden could do something similar for the amount of the 43 million borrowers who owe $1.6 trillion in student debt.
Yes, he can and he should. This is, you know, as Senator Warren was saying in that clip, this is the, you know, best thing the federal government can do. This is the easiest way that we can help, you know, with the racial wealth equity gap. You know, it's not going to completely end it, but we will absolutely, you know, Ashley touched on it too, student debt disproportionately impacts people of color. We will see that be lessened. It disproportionately impacts women. Women hold $1 trillion of that debt. To have $50,000 written off of your loans, and for so many, that will completely cancel out all of their federal loans. You know, our organization supports $50,000 or more. We know that people are struggling with more than that, but to really wonderful studies that Ashley and her team have done at Center for Responsible Lending, we would be able to help so many people at 50, and we can't ignore that.
You know,
we can't have less.
Yeah.
You know, 10 is not going to do enough.
We talk a lot about numbers and statistics. As you both said, there's a debate about, you know, from President Biden and many, many others about who this would actually help. And we can't spend money forgiving loans for people who've gone to elite colleges. But let's talk about just how difficult this is for millions and millions of people right now, especially under COVID. I was watching clips yesterday of a number of young people who said, you know, I have to live with my parents. I have to choose between feeding myself and feeding my cat. I have to choose between paying my electric bill, and student loan debt always comes first. I mean, so many people were struggling before COVID. Obviously, COVID made it so much worse. So, Natalia, can you just tell us about how difficult this is for millions and millions of people out there?
Absolutely, Rose. So we actually surveyed our supporters. We have about 2 million supporters nationwide, small fraction of the 45 plus million borrowers. But we surveyed almost 60,000 people in December based on how student debt's impacting them with COVID. And over 65% are facing increased anxiety, depression, or stress. 77% of borrowers do not feel financially secure. They rate their financial wellness as poor or very poor. We know exactly what you were saying, that they struggle with food insecurity, rent insecurity. You know, and this is with a student loan pause, mind you, for so many borrowers. The fear is, you know, as Ashley said, that does not go far enough. And we have to do something before October 1st, when all of these loans will come online at the same time and only compound the current financial crisis that so many people are feeling.
Ashley, what would you add? What do we need to know about how difficult this is for millions of people?
Absolutely. So I think, you know, you mentioned the young people who are struggling, but I think we have to remember that it's not just young people. There are tons of people who are getting their Social Security garnished. There are tons of older Americans who are struggling under student debt. And that's because the system itself is unworkable and unsustainable. So much of this debt that is outstanding will never be repaid. And it won't be repaid because it never should have been amassed in the first place. We never should have gotten here. This wasn't the intention or dream behind the Higher Education Act. It was supposed to be mostly grant-based aid. And so the fact that people are having to stay in repayment for decades and barely making a dent on their balance, that we're watching them get their wages garnished, their earned income tax credits garnished, their Social Security benefits garnished, we should all be concerned about that. This myth of these high-income, high-wealth borrowers who would be most benefited by this by cancellation is just not true. The folks who are struggling the most are the low-income, low-wealth people, are the people of color who have never been allowed to create and build wealth and sustain wealth in this country. And so we have to be very clear about who we're talking about when we're talking about the student debt crisis, right? Like, this is very different than what folks think it is, and it's not going to be repaid. So there was a study out of Brandeis that showed that for the typical Black borrower, after 20 years in repayment, they still had 95% of their original balance. And that's because interest continues to accrue, it capitalizes, and these balances are negatively amortizing. And so this is not working. And then the flip side is the programs that are there that are supposed to help borrowers are not working. Public service loan forgiveness doesn't work. IBR forgiveness doesn't work. None of this works. It's too complex. The servicers, there's servicer error. There's all these problems here. So this is not just an opportunity to advance racial equity and boost the economy. It's an opportunity to start fresh. Let's cancel so much of this debt. Let's reform the system. let's work on debt-free college so we don't end up in this place again in 10 years.
That is Ashley Harrington, a lawyer and federal advocacy director at the Center for Responsible Lending. Natalia Abrams is executive director of Student Debt Crisis. And today we are talking about demands for President Biden to forgive $50,000 in student debt. Those pushing for that plan say it would make 36 million borrowers debt-free. Women and people of color would be among the biggest beneficiaries. If you have any questions or comments for our guests, where do you stand on this issue? If you have a student debt story to share, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org or tweet us at Your Call Radio. Ashley, you brought up the fact about seniors, who are the fastest growing group of student debt holders in the United States. In 2016, 40,000 seniors had their Social Security checks garnished to pay student loans. For people who are not familiar with this, can you talk about the interest rates and how the interest rates just make it so hard for people to climb out of this hole?
Yeah, so it's, you know, the interest rates are set by statute every year. It's a certain amount above the base treasury rate. But it's not just the rates themselves. It's also the fact that how interest is accrued, all of the ways that interest can capitalize. And so once it's capitalized, they're adding that old interest to your principal balance. And then you start to also accrue interest on that. It's the fact that, servicers are steering folks into forbearance, and folks don't realize that while you don't have to pay while you're in forbearance, interest is still accruing. And when you come out of that, it will capitalize again. And so all of these things are adding to that. And then IBR, while it is helpful in helping a lot of folks manage their repayment, it also means that the payments sometimes are not covering the interest. And so we're watching it just continue to grow and grow, and people's balance, it's never going down.
Never going down. What would you add to that, Natalia?
That, you know, she's just absolutely right, you know, in terms of these programs. I don't want to deter folks that, you know, haven't had their loans paused that need these programs right now. It's always better than going into default to be on an income-driven repayment program. Public service loan forgiveness is real, but the problem is the complexity. I'm about, after this call, to do an hour and a half plus workshop to try to explain these programs to supporters. It's something that our organization's worked on for 7 years plus. That's not something that, you know, nonprofits and grassroots organizations shouldn't have to work on. This should have been figured out from the Department of Education long ago. This is a multi-administration failure of the student loan system. And it's been, you know, the buck has been passed on to the student loan borrower, who has been harmed time and time again. And, you know, we feel that, you know, if you struggle with why borrowers should get debt cancellation, one of the ways we look at it is a big, you know, class action lawsuit, that these confusions and complexities between borrower and their loan servicers has cost the student loan borrower tens of thousands of dollars over the lifetime of their loans to no fault of their own. Many of the student loan borrowers we've talked to want to pay their loans back. They have tried to pay their loans back, and they've had so many roadblocks along the way that it's not just caused them, you know, stress. It's cost them a ton of money as well.
We have a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to jump in and piggyback on that. The complexity of the system, right? So Natalia and I both work on student loans all the time. And I can honestly say I learn things about the system every week, right? Something I didn't know. That's how complex it is. Because what they've done is they've, you know, just stacked program on top of program. The rules for enrollment and staying enrolled are constantly changing. And so it is not easy by any means to manage your debt the way it is set up.
We have an email from David who says, why not have the government take over all the debt at no interest rather than these loan shark private lenders that charge outrageous interest rates? What would you say to that, Ashley?
So the vast majority of the $1.7 trillion in student debt is actually federally owned or guaranteed debt. And so those interest rates are set under statute. And so the reason why we're asking for the federal government to do something about this is because this is absolutely a federal government problem that was created by federal policies and can be alleviated by federal action. So absolutely, we need to do something about interest and capping it, because even if once we get the 50K cancellation, because, you know, I'm going to speak it into existence, there are still going to be tons of borrowers who still have debt. And so we are going to need repayment reform. And that should include streamlining and simplifying and making income-based repayment actually affordable and workable, making forgiveness under those programs tax-free. It should include capping interest, ending all the ways it can be capitalized, no more garnishment of wages and EITC and Social Security. There's so many things that we can do after we get this 50K cancellation that will help the remaining borrowers.
And Aaron writes in, my own loans from the federal government in 2000 to 2001 were, quote, transferred or bought or something by Navient later. If I currently repay my loan to Navient, will my loan even be covered by any loan forgiveness from the federal government? Do you know, Ashley?
We'd have to know more. So Navient does still service federal loans, but they also have some private loans as well. So it's unclear. And I think they bought Wells Fargo's portfolio a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it sounds to me like
it's
purchase.
Probably a private loan.
Well,
we do advocate for relief for private student loan borrowers. There was actually a provision, in the HEROES Act last year, there was that was in the House version of the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, that would have provided relief and cancellation for private borrowers as well. So absolutely, that there is a way to do that, but it is a different process that would require some congressional action.
There are so many resources online. You're all doing incredible work. For people who do have questions about, you know, who owns their loan and what would be forgiven, where should they go to find answers? Natalia?
So, you know, right now there has been no student loan forgiveness passed. I think that should be clear. There is a, memo in the House, resolution in the bicameral resolution in the House and Senate pushing for debt cancellation and the 325 organizations. But at the moment, that hasn't happened. If you have a federal loan or want to see if you have a federal loan, we always suggest people go to studentaid.gov and log in there. If your loan is not in there 99.9% of the time, that means you have a private loan. And the best way to find a private loan is either asking the company that's sending you letters, if you're not getting that, a credit report. The private loans are a little bit more difficult to track down, but almost all federal loans will be in that studentaid.gov database.
Right. I think she was saying, or you can go to your own credit report. So your loans will be listed on your credit report and it should say who owns the loans if you're not sure. And okay. You should start there.
And we have a number of resources on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the student debt crisis in this country. More than 43 million people owe $1.6 trillion. And President Biden says he opposes a plan by top Democrats to forgive $50,000 in student debt. But those pushing for that plan say it would make 36 million borrowers debt-free. Women and people of color would be among the biggest beneficiaries. If you have any questions for our guests, any comments, you can give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Natalia Abrams is Executive Director of Student Debt Crisis, and Ashley Harrington is a lawyer and Federal Advocacy Director at the Center for Responsible Lending. Let's hear from John in Mountain View. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hello. So I'm John in Mountain View, and I'm a complete outsider to this discussion because I grew up in Europe and never had to pay anything for elementary school, high school, college, and I even spent 5 years writing a dissertation. And then I came to Stanford, where all my fees were paid for by donations So I've never paid a penny. Well, I paid $100 or something over all these years. So my question is, why do people who decide to take up a loan why shouldn't they pay back the loan?
So, well, all right. You're saying that in Europe, you're not paying for school. And I think it's really important for us to remember that. I actually went to a doctor in Europe 2 years ago. The doctor didn't pay anything to go to school. So it's important to look at priorities in the United States. Ashley, why are people taking out loans? I mean, this is a big question. People who are low income, who want to get an education and who deserve to get an education, have no choice but to take out loans. I mean, these days, even community college, estate schools in California are very expensive.
That's exactly right. So it's no longer a choice, right? We are past the days and time where it was a choice whether you could achieve financial security without going to college. Post-Great Recession, the vast majority of the jobs that offer good income have required some form of post-secondary education. And so because of that, in order to get a good job, you have to have at least some college. Now, we also haven't kept up our federal or state investment in higher education. The Pell Grant used to cover 70% of the cost of college at a public four-year. Now it covers 30%. After the Great Recession, there was a $10 billion budget hole in state budgets. They filled that by cutting the budgets of public higher education. That didn't mean that tuition went down. It meant that more of that was passed on to students and families. The other piece of that is so many students have to borrow because their families don't have the intergenerational wealth to help put them through school. So there are a lot of folks who have, even when they're able to get high income, because they don't have any wealth to fall back on, that income doesn't go far at all if they have it. So this is really an intergenerational issue and a failure of policy at so many levels across decades. It begins with inadequate access to the GI Bill, redlining, Jim Crow. It begins with people being with inadequate funding of HBCUs and support there. It begins with not allowing the Pell Grant to keep up with the cost of college. It begins with the fact that college continues to grow and wages are stagnant. And then it comes to the fact that you have to go to college. It's not a choice. You can't even work your way through college anymore, right? So there was a time where you could work part-time and not take out any debt. If you wanted to work your way through college now, you would have to work like 60 hours a week. If you're working 60 hours a week, how do you then go to class and graduate in 4 years? You don't. So then you end up taking out more debt or you don't finish. And so now you're a non-completer. And that means you have debt and no degree. And that makes it even more likely that you're going to default. We've also allowed for-profit colleges to prey on communities, vulnerable communities, people of color, women, veterans with high-priced degrees that offer very low quality and making it really hard for folks to pay those back. So it's not that people are taking out debt. It's the system. This is a system-wide failure that is then being, and then there's an effort to put that on the students and the borrowers and the families when all they have done is believed in the American dream, that if they went to college, they did what they were supposed to do, they would be able to provide for themselves and their families. And that's not what's happening.
You know, the other thing I wanted to ask you, Ashley, because I hear this a lot, obviously, you should not have to go to college to be able to have a decent life and provide for your family. But I, as a first generation college student, it's insulting when I hear people say, well, college just isn't for everyone. Because I wouldn't be hosting this show right now if I didn't go to college. And I'm that person that comes up because my parents didn't go to college. Well, college just isn't for everyone. So can you talk about that? Because I'm just hearing these comments more and more now that this debate is becoming so heated.
That's absolutely right. So what I hear when folks say is college isn't for everyone. You mean college isn't for low-income people and people of color. Let's be very clear. And there was very much a time in this country where college was not for low-income people and people of color, explicitly so. And the point of the HEA was to open up the doors of higher education to everyone. And this realization that not only was it the right thing to do, higher education and access was a public good. Everyone benefits from a well-educated society. Everyone benefits if people can go to college and then start businesses, save for retirement, buy houses. That boosts the entire economy. That boosts the communities around these individuals. That helps families. That is supposed to be financial security and wealth building. And so we want to be very careful of saying college is not for everyone. And we end up in a situation of steering and tracking where we're saying, oh, well, it's only if you can afford it, when we've created a system where literally only a select few can afford it.
Right. Natalia, what would you add to that?
I just know, you know, kind of speaking from your situation, from so many supporters that we've spoken to, that, you know, people of color typically need to get higher degrees or graduate degrees to have the same jobs as their white counterparts. Mm-hmm. Then we're also seeing, you know, on the hiring side, that you need bachelor's degrees for jobs you don't necessarily need a degree for, but they're making a requirement. So that, you know, let's talk to employers about not making bachelor's degrees requirements if we want to talk about school not being for everyone. I don't think we start with the students. And all the complexities Ashley was talking about, she was just talking about going to college, you know, then paying back your loan to the initial caller. Then you get into all that confusion and error with the servicer for the folks that even want to pay their loan back. So it's just such an oversimplification to, again, put it on the individual when this has been a systematic failure, unfortunately, for, you know, decades.
Exactly. And also, Ashley, to add to that, it just, you know, if you come from a family that has not gone to college, when you go to college, it just opens a brand new world to you. I mean, forget the job prospects, although that is obviously very important, but just meeting people from other parts of the country and the world and being on your own and having to make your own decisions. I mean, the entire experience just changes you as a person. And it's incredibly important for those who want that experience to be able to access it.
That is absolutely right. There is so much more to college, because I'm even afraid of this idea that the only reason folks go to college is for a job, right? It's not just that. It's not just to make money. I don't think that's the way we want to frame it. There's so much more to college, to the college experience and what you learn and what you gain, the network you're able to get from that. All of those things that if we curb access, if we don't ensure that access becomes meaningful for everyone, we're denying them all of that. We're not just denying them a degree. We're denying them all that comes with it.
Right. I think that aspect of this deserves so much more attention. We have just a couple of minutes left. What can people do who would like to get involved in this? What's next? I mean, the question came up on Tuesday night. Jen Psaki, the press secretary, has been asked about this. Natalia, what is next for your campaign?
So something that it's always ongoing is want to hear from you, but we want you to speak out and share your stories, why you want debt canceled, how student loans are impacting you. We have a story collection on our website at studentdebtcrisis.org, but we also suggest you emailing, calling, and bothering your members of Congress and elected officials and telling them you need debt cancellation and how important it is for you. So, you know, we are collecting stories. We are also sending letters to Congress. Over 600,000 letters from our supporters were sent last year alone, demanding debt cancellation. That's one of the best ways to get involved, is by sharing your story. You know, working with us. And like Ashley said, she's going to speak it into existence, the 325 organizations plus and the 45 million borrowers. If we continue this public pressure, we can't lose.
Mm. Ashley, what would you add?
I co-sign everything Natalia said. We need to be constantly talking about this on social media, calling your Congress folks. Tell them to co-sponsor the resolution for 50K. Tell them to get on there. Tell them to be outspoken about the need for Joe Biden to do everything he can to help student borrowers.
Ashley Harrington is a lawyer and federal advocacy director at the Center for Responsible Lending, where she focuses on student debt. Ashley, thank you for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Natalia Abrams is Executive Director of Student Debt Crisis, a nonprofit dedicated to reforming student debt and higher ed loan policies. Natalia, thank you for your work and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. And you can find more information about student debt at yourcallradio.org, and we will definitely continue following this important issue. Coming up after a quick break, we will get an update on the COVID vaccine rollout here in California. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.